Greetings, friends. Welcome to the first episode of Gem Hunt, a horror movie podcast dedicated to finding those buried treasures, those diamonds in the rough that horror fans have either forgotten about or did not know about in the first place. Each episode, we, your unqualified, semi-clueless, potentially drunk hosts, will review an underseen horror film and debate whether we feel that that film should be classified as a hidden gem. My name is Cody. I am a bureaucrat who may or may not be a serial killer.
And I'm Beth, his wife. I'm pretty sure he's not a serial killer, and I'm just here for the snacks.
And I'm Buggy, and I'm also here.
Perfect. So before we dig into this, I just have to ask you guys, is this a pretentious idea?
Yes.
Like, are we, like, super nerds, like, trying to be cool?
I don't think so. My dream has always been to start a podcast and talk about everything I want to talk about. And I don't know. I don't think it's pretentious in a sense, because even if no one listened to this, I would just want to talk about movies and things I like anyway.
Yeah, I guess it's an excuse to talk about movies.
Right, so that's exactly. Not that's the way I see it. Yeah. I'm just like, this is an excuse for me to get to hear my own voice. So I like it.
And we can talk about things.
Which is pretentious. Well.
Movies and things.
That's true.
Movies and things. My second question is, were you in your right minds when you agreed to do this podcast with me?
I never am.
Yeah, I don't know what you mean by that.
Do you mean were we like inebriated or like unconscious?
Just seems like a stupid idea. I'm full of stupid ideas, and I just wanted to make sure that you weren't just, I didn't trick you into doing this.
No.
No, you didn't pay us either.
Maybe someday I will.
Still waiting for that.
Okay, so now that we got that out of the way, let's do a quick overview of the show. So like I mentioned, our primary goal is to watch a lot of horror films, like we just prefaced. But ultimately, what we're trying to do here is find hidden gems. And we can talk about how we're going to approach that in the show a little bit later. But first, what are your thoughts or gut reactions on the term hidden gem? Like, what does that mean to you?
I didn't really know it meant anything. It means finding something undiscovered, maybe, to me. But I didn't know that it was maybe some sort of horror movie speak that I didn't know about. Even though I watch a lot of horror movies, I hadn't really heard that as a common term.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know. I think of, like, a lot of the movies that I love being hidden gems. I mean, I also think, like, I kind of get that term mixed up with, like, a sleeper hit. Like, I feel like those are two terms that, to me, kind of mean the same thing, but they don't really. But, I mean, I love those. There's, like, random movies, like, that I think are amazing that I don't feel like anyone's watched. And I'm like, was that a fever dream? Did that even happen? And those are my favorite types of movies.
Yeah, I like the term sleeper hit. It's almost, a synonym, or is it sort of something different? It's like a sleeper hit, something that like nobody expected to be a hit and then it was.
I think it's over time.
It's over time. So it's like a little different, because the hidden gem's definitely like, it's not something that like everyone knows about. But I would say, like, you know, a good example is like Mad Max. Like, that's a movie that really did not do well when it first was released. And then over time, it's become something people love. I mean, there's like two huge sequels with like insane budgets and like insane actors and actresses.
A sleeper hit is like a cult classic.
Basically, yeah. Mm-hmm. But those, like, to me are kind of like brother and sister terms in like a weird way. I don't know how to explain. They complement each other, I guess, in a way.
No, I like that. That makes a lot of sense to me. It's just, The Big Lebowski's a bit like that, where it has definitely become a cult classic. It wasn't well received, but yeah, I think what we're talking about here is the ones that they're great, but for some reason, no one has seen them. And that's what we're looking for. Like, the few people that have seen them would agree that, oh, yeah, why hasn't anyone seen this movie yet? Whereas maybe some of those other ones are like, oh, it took a while, but everyone has seen it.
And everyone loves it.
Yeah, everyone of like a certain age or demographic, like over time, like somebody told them. And then now, you know, 25% of the 30-year-old population has seen the same movie. That's like a cult classic or sleeper hit. That's a sleeper hit.
I think like Hidden Gem can be either like movies that are like actually really good and scary where you're like, that's insane. People need to watch that. And also like, it's so bad, it's good.
Yeah, that's movies. Just fun. Straight
where it's like, fun. Oh my God, this is the funniest thing I've ever seen. I love this movie.
Or there's something really great in it, like just like really great costumes or really great lighting or really great music. And yeah.
For sure. So I know why I wanted to do this podcast. I don't know if y'all have the same reasoning, but, you know, there are a lot of good horror podcasts out there. I won't name drop them all at this moment, but the thing that I've been searching for in a podcast is someone that tells me about shit that I haven't heard of yet. And a lot of the good podcasts that I follow, most of the time, they're talking about things that I've seen or maybe something new that I'm anticipating watching at some point. But there aren't a lot of podcasts that I've found yet that are just nailing the, like, here's something you've never heard of that you want to rent next weekend after you listen to the episode. You know what I mean?
Except for one that doesn't exist anymore.
Right, yeah.
Which I won't, I mean, yeah, we don't have to get into that.
We can dissect the...
It's your Roman Empire for sure.
The rest in peace later, but yeah, I think we're on the same page there. So let's get into like how we're going to select films. And this is up for discussion. This is just my proposal and I would like to keep it simple. But I think we should only review horror films that have 5,000 votes or less on IMDb. And I kind of bounced around about what level of viewership would be appropriate for a hidden gem. 5,000 is actually pretty dang low, but it just seemed like some like really good classics are in the sort of 5,000 to 10,000 range. And I think I really want to dig up some stuff that maybe is a little more rare, a little harder to find. And so 5,000 was kind of an arbitrary pick for a number. I don't know. Any thoughts on that? Like, I mean, it kind of is arbitrary, so it doesn't really matter at the end of the day, but
could there be maybe an asterisk if, like, it has a few more than that, but there haven't been any reviews in, like, a certain amount of time? Like, what if it had 5,000 votes 10 years ago and then, like, 100 people have reviewed it since or something like that?
Yeah, I think we could
Would that be, like, a place we could, like...
We could put some caveats on it for sure.
But I think... I don't know how many votes normal movies have. You kind of do you?
Well, here's an example. So I think a lot of films that end up with the hidden gem tag, if you're a seasoned horror fan or if you have any bit of nerd in you, you're like, you're just a film fan in general, maybe you see that on a list and you'd say, I've heard of that. I've seen a review of that. Somebody I knew told me about it, even if I haven't seen it yet. And so my example is House of the Devil. I think that pops up on a lot of hidden gem lists that I see. And it's a great movie. I love that movie. But right now on IMDb, it has 51,000 votes.
Oh, wow. We've all seen it, right?
Yeah.
All three of us
have
seen it.
It has a ridiculous amount of critic reviews. And it is kind of newer. And that's something we'll discover as we're going through this, is newer films, more votes, more reviews. Mm-hmm. Older films, sometimes maybe more critic reviews or less votes. It's it depends on the age, but that's a movie that if you're in the know, if you're a horror fan, if you're just an independent film fan, you probably heard of it, you know. Mm-hmm. But it gets tagged with that a lot. And so that was just kind of the example that I was thinking of, is like a movie that I'm like, okay, yes, if you're a mainstream movie fan, you're just getting into horror, for sure go check out a movie like House of the Devil that is on somebody's hidden gem list. But if you're a horror fan, you've probably seen it or at least heard of it.
Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's unrealistic either. Like, it's kind of like touch and go. Like, it doesn't even matter if a film's popular always. Like, I've definitely seen, like, movies like... that are really mainstream and popular that have like 10,000 votes or like 10,000 reviews and stuff like that. Like, I don't think 5,000 is that unrealistic at all.
Like, it's not too low.
It's not too low. And it's not too high either. I don't think so. I think we'll definitely find like ones with like literally like 70.
I have to admit, I've never looked at how many votes a movie has on IMDb before. I usually just look up actors to see where they are from.
No, that's usually what I'm doing as well. But as I was going into this and I started to think about, like, how are we going to select the movies? That's one thing I thought about. And then, so here's the other thing that I want to do every episode. And this is the thing I'm kind of excited about because I'm actually a nerd and this gets a little data heavy. No, it barely gets data heavy.
It's data light.
Yeah, it's data light, man. Is I want to do an obscurity rating for each of these movies. And I do want it to be somewhat scientific just because I think trying to be subjective when you're judging the obscurity of a movie is ridiculous. Like, how the hell are you just, without any kind of criteria, going to judge the obscurity of something? So I came up with a few ideas. I'm going to walk through them. I think they make sense. We'll see. We can talk about it. So, criteria number one, and you can burp into the mic if you want, you know.
Burping.
Some of my favorite YouTubers just blatantly burp.
Yeah, into but the they mics. Have to like get like an audience first before yeah, they I get to so. Do that.
Maybe that's how you get an audience.
Yeah, you just.
Okay. So, first criteria is a number of burps in the movie.
Burping. We're not going to get far with that.
Nope.
No.
I mean, you never.
That know. Is not a criteria. It could become one later. I don't know how.
Was
that
the movie
would...
made in Texas? There might be some burps.
I.
Okay.
Okay. First criteria, IMDb votes. So, obviously, it's got to be under 5,000. But we have a little range here that I've come up with. And I made a list of about 30 movies on my favorite horror movie list that meet the less than 5,000 criteria. And I kind of ran some numbers on the means and the medians and the averages of those. So that's how I kind of came up with these little buckets for each of these. Mm-hmm. So for IMDb votes, if it's less than 1,000, it gets 3 points out of 3. So this one has a full 3 points. And the overall score is going to be 10. If it's between 1,000 and 3,000 points, or 3,000 votes, it gets 2 points. And if it's between 3,000 and 5,000 votes, it gets 1 point. Next is critic ratings, because, you know, who cares about just what random people on IMDb are clicking on and like voting? We want to know what critics think, too. So, in terms of IMDb critic ratings, there's a total of 2 points here. If there's less than 50 critic ratings, it gets 2 points. Between 50 and 75 critic ratings, it gets 1 point. Between 75 and 100 critic ratings, it gets a half a point. Anything over 100, no points, you lose, go home.
All right.
Okay, but that category, there's only a maximum.
And then same
points.
With maximum like Rotten Tomato yeah. and all that.
So yeah, I got Rotten Tom Tato on here.
Perfect.
I got Rom Tom Potato. How many Rom Tom Tomatoes critic reviews... Mm-hmm. This one's kind of weird because this is a website that's really geared more towards new films.
Yeah.
So when you start to look up old films on Rotten Tomatoes, it drops off significantly and quickly. So, you know, even a somewhat obscure film is going to have a decent amount of Rotten Tomato reviews. Old films, like even if they're kind of popular, they are low as shit, man. So I weighted this a little bit lower than some of the other ones.
Yeah.
So this is going to be a total of 1 point. So if it's less than 15 Rotten Tomato critic reviews, 1 point. Between 15 and 30, half a point. Over 30 critic reviews on Rotten Tomatoes, 0 points. And then the final category for all of the eggs is the availability. And I think this one's really cool because this is one where it if you're just looking at streaming, everybody could find anything on streaming these days, right? But not everything. So this is a total of 4 points. If the film is only on VHS, you get the full 4 points. If it's only on DVD, as in there's no streaming options, you either have to buy it on eBay or Amazon or go to your local video store, which mostly don't exist anymore except for a lucky few of us.
Movie Madness.
You get 3 points. If it has a DVD release or a Blu-ray release, and it has very limited streaming options, so two or less, you know, you could rent it on DVD, but you could find it on one or two places, you get 2 points. If it's streaming between 3 and 5 platforms, you get a point, and you get half a point for anything that's streaming over 5 platforms.
I have one question about this, okay, which I've had before, which is, what about that you can watch any movie in clips on YouTube? Are you talking about like an entire copy to stream?
Probably. I think so. Yeah.
Like, I think even the most obscure movie that's on VHS, you can find where someone ripped it and sometimes, you can watch, like,
though.
Yeah.
I've been trying to find this one movie for a while and it's not on YouTube, okay, and it's really pissing me off.
I mean, I think
so that doesn't count as like a stream.
That's a really good point. And we do live in a digital era where if you really wanted to see something, you could find it online. Mm-hmm.
Probably.
But this is kind of what I'm thinking here with these criteria are, you know, maybe people that aren't digging deep, you know?
Right.
Like people that want to watch something but aren't going to like dig through a bunch of like lists of obscure movies and try to like download something off of a torrent site or like go to their local video store and dig through the buckets or whatever, you know.
Got it. So if you're just like looking on Netflix, Hulu, Amazon, whatever, mm-hmm, the fuck, Apple TV, whatever.
Which I think most people are kind of doing these days.
Yeah.
So here, let's do a couple example scores just to kind of like walk through how this works. So my first one, and it's kind of a newer one, the movie Headcount from 2018. Beth and I really like this. It got some mixed reviews. I don't know if you've seen it.
I have seen it, yes.
So in terms of IMDb votes, it has 4,800, so it just barely slides under our criteria there. So it gets 1 point for that. It has 32 IMDb critic votes, so it gets 2 points for that, for under 50. Rotten Tomato critics, it has 20, so it gets half a point there. It's streaming on 17 platforms, so it gets half a point there. So total points, 4 out of 10. So, you know, not super obscure, but you know, it got a few points on the what do you call it, the metrics.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like it's available, but no one's watched it.
Kind of, yeah.
That's a different kind of gem.
So here's another one that I think is really cool. Don't Look Up, a Japanese film from 1996. We watched it a few Octobers ago. It's like a cool, creepy ghost movie. IMDb votes, 646.
Whoa. Have you seen it, Bugs?
No, I actually have not.
We might need to do it on this podcast at some point. So it has 646 votes. That's 3 points. It has 8 IMDb critic reviews.
Whoa.
Got 2 points there. It has 0 Rotten Tomatoes critic reviews. So it gets 1 point there. It's available on DVD only, but it's very hard to find. Luckily, we have a movie store, so we could rent it there if we wanted to. It's not streaming, so you got 3 points there. That is a 9 out of 10 on the obscurity rating.
Wow.
So that's kind of how it works. Like, does that kind of make sense, mm-hmm, in terms of, like, I mean, it doesn't really matter, but if we're looking for hidden gems, if we find something that's really good and really hard to find, I feel like it's kind of like an Easter egg or something. Oh, I found this thing that like everybody's been looking,
yeah,
for.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Hey.
And welcome our dog to the podcast.
This is Albert.
Albert, stop.
I think it will be helpful as we're going through these movies, just to kind of get a sense of how hard to find they are and whether anyone should seek them out, depending on what we think about them, because, you know, what we think is all that matters.
So it is.
You guys want to get into the movie of watching today?
Yes.
Let's do it.
Okay. Everyone, I'm very excited about this because this is a movie I've been wanting to rewatch for a while. I saw it a long time ago. It's called Heart of Midnight, 1988. Well, at least that's the release date on IMDb. It actually hit U.S. theaters in 1989. I think it probably came out in some European theaters in 88. But this film was written and directed by Matthew Chapman. I don't actually know anything about Matthew Chapman. I looked up his filmography. There isn't anything that I've seen on there. I'm not saying any of those films are good or bad, but I hadn't heard of them. So, it's a director I don't know a lot about. The cast, pretty sweet, starring Jennifer Jason Leigh. James Rebhorn, who is one of those guys that you just know him.
He's just there in movies. Everything,
like character actor, yeah, and lots of things.
He's hot.
Steve Buscemi, we'll get into him later. Let's not give too much away about his character in this movie. Frank Stallone, I'm going to love talking about him. I'm going to talk some shit about this guy. Hey, did you guys know that Frank Stallone is a singer?
Oh, I did after this movie.
Who is he in the movie? Which one?
He plays the first detective.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That asked.
Is it too early for me to say about the singing?
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Just my theory is that he agreed to appear in this movie if he was allowed to do a musical number.
Because that came out of nowhere. We'll talk about that.
No, I believe that. No, that makes a lot of sense to me. But he actually does a lot more singing than he does acting. I listened to a bit of his shit on Apple Music today, and I gotta say, he kind of is all over the place. not a bad voice, though. Not a bad singer. But I didn't know that before I did my research, that Frank Stallone is actually more of a singer than a goddamn actor. Anyways, and then we have the wonderful Peter Coyote, who I had never heard of before. Have you seen that guy in other things?
Yeah. I don't remember, but I looked it up, because I was like, oh yeah, him, and I think he's a babe.
Great name.
You don't think
wonderful
so?
Name.
It is an awesome name.
You don't think he's a babe? Though?
I don't like remember who babe. He is.
Yeah, you do.
Which one is he also?
We'll get into it.
I don't know people's real names.
I think he's kind of like a counterculture-y actor that I've seen. And I wish that I would have
done better
about taking notes. Because I feel like while we were watching it, I was like, oh, yeah, he's in blank and blank and blank. And they're all like weirdo movies.
Based on what I've read, this movie's received quite a mixed reaction.
She's on the Peter Coyote tip.
I just figured it out.
On PDCoyote.com.
He's kind of a silver fox.
Oh, yeah. In the movie, he was a cutie patootie also.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. I just don't understand what makes a man a man.
This is the part where I say that we are mother and daughter, so maybe we have like similar
I don't know. I just
genetic.
I don't know, something about him cooking dinner.
Hells yeah. Let's get into a recap of this thing, and I'm going to need y'all's help because my memory is a shit sandwich. But, all right, so first up, before we even get into anything, opening credit sequence, we got some serious soap opera vibes. There's just like this blue screen, basic ass titles, almost like we're about to watch like a Cinemax softcore porn or something.
Yeah.
Very much reminds me of like Twin Peaks or a Blue Velvet feeling, but maybe that's because I've seen it before and I knew it was coming. And so sort of like that vibe up front was kind of like feeding into that. But the first shocking revelation before we even see 1 second of film, we find out the music in this movie was composed by none other than Yanni.
Do you know who Yanni is?
No.
She's 20.
I don't know.
No, but yeah, he's like from our childhood, he was like kind of a cheesy musician already, but obviously very talented. Yeah, but kind of like people's aunts and grandmas like. So to have him attached with like this,
wow.
As it develops, I'm like, whoa, Yanni's doing something.
I mean, it totally makes sense for the opening credits. And, you know, I actually looked up Yanni's work after this. He hasn't done a lot of film work. Certainly no horror films in his catalog other than this movie. So, I don't know, maybe he learned his lesson. Although, I think he probably saw this. And
shots
like,
fired.
He was like, what the fuck is this?
Well, you know? Mm-hmm.
He's like, this is not my audience.
Get up, Yanni, get up.
Before we even see one bit of film, we've already got Yanni, we've got this music, we're...
Just chuck that.
I had to.
Anyway...
Stop interrupting.
We're shooting white wine now. We're doing white wine. Doing white. Which, well, mm-hmm. No, we might need to get into the plot of this because it does get a little dicey.
It gets wild. So you should do a summary, and then if there are things along the way that we are like, oh yeah, that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, here we go. So we are introduced to the main character, Carol, played by Jennifer Jason Leigh. And the film opens with Carol walking up to this nasty-looking building in what appears to be a pretty grimy part of town. And I gotta say, the film is kind of grimy from the get-go. Mm-hmm. The building is called the Midnight, obviously some kind of old nightclub, maybe the titular Midnight in our title here. That's something I didn't talk about, but we're going to have to talk about titular lines when they come up.
Can I also say she is walking with a boot on, like she's got a broken foot? And I, you know, just kind of hobbled. I think that's important.
Yeah, that's a good point. She hobbles up with a boot on her foot. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, the building, the entire location, actually, Charleston, South Carolina. I looked it up on Google Maps, so I found where the location was. This area has obviously been gentrified as fuck at this point, but I was trying to find the building. I couldn't really find it on the strip. I read that at some point you could see it on the map, but
is
not
that
really
the real
anymore.
Building too, like all of the like rooms they used in it?
I doubt it. No,
I bet,
yeah, probably
I bet
sets.
There were sets. Yeah.
That's probably sets, because I'm like, if that's an actual building, that is pretty sick. Like obviously not the stuff in it, but maybe the actual like
Mm-hmm. The hallway.
It did give a sense of, like, you know, we talked about this when we were watching it, just like there were old buildings like that that just had a bunch of creepy crawly spaces in them.
Oh, people live, you know, artists lived in like lofts. And I mean, they still do, obviously. It's not like that's
it
over.
It does look like an apartment building, kind of, at least that hallway.
Yeah.
Instead of sex rooms. Spoiler.
Right. Yeah, that's what we're getting into right now. So we learned pretty quickly that Carol has inherited this building from her uncle Fletcher, and it's not just a nightclub.
No.
It is some kind of seedy sex club. And apparently Uncle Fletcher is kind of a freaky ass dude.
Yeah.
We also learned that Carol has struggled with her mental health recently, maybe on multiple occasions. And this is a concept that comes back several times throughout the film. I think it actually is maybe one of the key components of the plot line, but we can get into that when we start to dissect it a bit. So she enters this building, and it's fucked out from the get-go. You know, it's a mess in there. It's under construction. There's some random dude sleeping up on some scaffolding. And then, bam, James Rebhorn shows up in his full handyman outfit. And, you know, this guy's recognizable. He's been in everything. So you're like, oh, I know that guy. He's here. He's going to maybe save the day or at least tell us what's going on. So Richard's renovating the place, and he's got a couple weird dudes working with him. And apparently Carol wants to keep it just as her uncle would have wanted. I think they might have talked about that a little bit, but she just is like, do it exactly how he said it should be done.
Yeah, because at that point, she likes him. Like, she really likes her uncle.
Her uncle, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's like her, like, hero.
For sure. So, yeah, these two dudes that are working for him, they seem a bit sketchy. One of them was that dude sleeping up on the scaffolding. We get the sense that these guys might be a problem. Not Richard, he seems pretty good, but, and I guess one of the dudes turns out to be a good dude in the end, once we get into the shit, but at least one of those guys is sketchy. Carol gets the key for upstairs, and this is when we kind of discover that not only has she inherited this place, she's going to live there. So she starts exploring the space, which is one of my favorite sequences in the film. And I don't want to give too much away, but, you know, as she's just walking through this upstairs apartment above the club, it's just so strange. Like, every space is different. It's very cool. Very cool introduction to the scenery and into the place that you're going to be living in throughout the whole film. So she's doing her exploration, and here we have to do a trigger warning, I guess. I'm going to get called out by the
woke police. Oh, are going to get angry at you.
No, like the anti-woke police are going to get angry at me.
Oh, I get it. Okay, I don't know which.
Maybe they both will. Who knows?
Oh, I meant the anti-woke. I forgot the anti part. We don't need a goddamn trigger warning. Mm-hmm. You pussy.
That's
what he's talking about.
Can I say just really quickly too something else that would make whoever these anti-woke people are mad is that, I know we're going to talk about it, but the whole vibe of the beginning is she's like this woman going into this very like male space, and it's like really uncomfortable.
Oh, for sure.
For someone
yeah.
who is a woman, right?
Yeah. Well, she's also like, as we'll get into, her character definitely has her own past with like men and discomfort.
Right. But they are just like, who the fuck are you?
No. And it is emphasized too. Like, I don't think this movie is trying to make any like amazing commentary on how terrible men are. But at the same time, it is like emphasizing how like these men don't care about like her opinion really at all. She keeps trying to talk to them. Like, Richard's cool. He's nice. But like, there's like multiple scenes where she tells him to do something like related right, to and building, they're like, and they're like, okay, well, you're the boss, I guess.
That's a little bit sidelined.
They're
but not
also
really,
most of the men are awful in this film,
it's
like very bad. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyway,
sorry. Yeah.
No, these are important things. I'm not joking. Just because I'm drinking white wine doesn't mean I can't.
You can't, okay.
I can't align with your critique of the feminist ideals in this movie, which I think we should actually probably talk about it sometimes because there's some interesting ideas.
Yeah, no, I do.
So the trigger warning has been triggered. Oh, right. So there's some degenerates that are outside drinking, and they see Carol changing in the window from the outside, and this is the late 80s, so of course, once you've seen someone naked through a window, you know, you basically have to hit that.
You have to. Well, also,
there's no choice.
For some reason, and this is like in no way being like, this is Carol's fault, but why the hell does that door keep blowing open? Like, that door blows open, and they're like, oh, if that isn't an invitation, I don't know what is.
I mean,
and
have then, you seen the building?
I know, but in multiple times after that, they reference that, like, the door's open and that they could just come in, which I'm just like, can someone board that door up for the love of God, please?
There'd be no, like...
I know, they need to have the door open. But when I tell you, this is, like, a problem that is referenced multiple times. This is, it is.
Anyway, they see her through the window.
But they do.
And they cannot help
And
themselves.
That door blows open. And then, I'm sorry, I don't want to hijack, but this is where, like, I actually realized that Steve Buscemi was in this movie.
Yeah, this is the surprise. And this is what I was going to, this is actually that perfect segue.
Thank
I was
you.
Like, so she goes on her walkabout. She gets back, and she's surprised in her apartment by a very rapey Steve Buscemi.
Like, and I actually screamed in my room, oh my God, it's Steve Buscemi.
I wrote because I couldn't believe Steve Buscemi in my
I could not believe it. And he's looking real gross. He's looking gross.
Yeah,
by the way, he's a wonderful man and no one should ever hit him.
Yeah, don't hit Steve Buscemi.
Someone hit Steve Buscemi?
Yes, dude, you haven't heard about this?
Like recently or
yeah,
like in his past?
Somebody hit him in the face. Like he was walking down the street in New York.
Was he? Oh, he's in New York. That's why. He shouldn't have gone outside. It's New York.
These cities are
You didn't hear? This is a, you will have to cut this out.
No,
but
the women are getting
hit
in the face.
But my point is there's like a whole problem where women keep getting punched in the face, specifically in New York.
Steve Buscemi in the face.
So it might be the same perp who's been doing that.
I think people have...
it anyway. Might be connected.
Sideline.
I'll save my... it's one thing if No, apparently I'm not saving it.
Oh, no, here it goes, because this is exactly the conversation we had about this when I was so upset that somebody punched Steve Buscemi in the face when
it's
I saw
one,
that.
It's one thing if you punch a woman in the face, but don't you dare.
Don't you fucking dare punch Steve Buscemi in the face.
He's kind of an old man now, though.
Yep.
Anyway.
Okay, so.
In this movie, he's not a leg.
No. He's not old.
And he's not... Not a sympathetic character.
No, he's greasy.
He's very much looking like his character from Airheads. Maybe the same outfit. I'm not sure. It's amazing. He has his two nasty buddies with him, which are the construction dudes, right? They're like the dudes that were working on the building.
There's the one guy, too, and he ends up not wanting to be there. Like, there's like one guy who keeps being like, we shouldn't go in there. That's not a good
idea. And he's just playing some random video game in the corner.
Well, but also, the next action I feel bad for him, but at the same time I don't, because he's anything. Like just like catatonic in the corner, like playing a video game
which has some Apple theme, which is interesting. Oh, I'm way far away, huh?
there are many apples
but what happens when Steve Buscemi and his henchmen
arrive in that house,
in that apartment, in that building?
So yeah, this is the thing. How do you even, you know, it's a So we have the sexual assault scene. It's very upsetting. Mm-hmm. Steve Buscemi is...
It's bad.
I mean, does a very effective job of being just, like, so terrifying and so creepy.
It's and like, it comes out of nowhere, mm-hmm. too. Like, it's really out of left field. Like, suddenly, like, I didn't know Steve Buscemi was in this movie. Then suddenly he's, like, sexually assaulting
From
somebody.
From the moment you saw him on screen, though, you knew. He was the antagonist.
No, he's got his little switchblade.
He's eating a goddamn roast chicken on her table in her apartment. And he is like, do you want a leg or a breast? Which is like so like cheesy, but also like...
It's gross. It's gross. The whole time.
Okay.
So this whole thing is going on.
She gets raped is basically what's going on. Yeah. Yes.
The third guy's playing the weird video game, and at some point he kind of gives her a signal to, like, you can get out of here. So, like, she makes a break for it. There's a bit of a chase scene. I think they trigger a fire alarm. By the way,
the third guy is also black, which is relevant to what happens.
Is totally relevant.
Yes.
So, you know, she gets out the door. They punch the black guy in the face because
he tried to stop them, actually. She runs out, and then he tries to stop them. They're like, what are you? Are you fucking crazy? Because also, like, I don't know, someone called the cops or something because she screamed at some point.
Fire alarm. Yeah.
Yeah. Also. So they're like, everybody's outside. She gets away. The three perps are out there. The cops roll up, and we have a fucking cop shooting an unarmed black man in 1988 in like a way that felt very critical. Like, it felt like it could have been from a movie today, you know? It almost felt on purpose, like, this is going to be the guy that's going to get shot.
And I'm sure it was, because then think about what, like, 1988 is, you know, NWA. It's not like...
True.
You know, it's a time when people were making social... I mean, people from the beginning of Cops, people have been making commentary about cops shooting unarmed.
It wasn't finding its way into independent film.
No, not like this. Not that weren't, like... specifically topical, maybe. Well, that's the thing where horror movies are usually like...
Feel like do end up like bringing up a lot of like social commentary.
Totally.
But and also it is intentional for sure, because they bring up that man who sings, basically Frank Sinatra, but not Frank Stallone.
Frank Stallone.
Okay.
Frank Stallone.
Basically, the singer guy.
Yeah.
He's like talking about how this happened and how like basically an unarmed black man got shot, and he's like, and it's a whole to-do in our like office.
And he's a shit cop.
Yeah. No, and he sucks, and he's complaining about it. He's like, and now we're getting investigated because of it, like what happened and the fact that like it just, it was like obvious for sure, and it was like an intentional move.
No, that was intentional. The way the rape was handled felt intentional. Like, it was really disturbing, actually, and it felt... it wasn't one of those glossy, like, oh, maybe she kind of liked it.
No, it was like
80s
bad.
Horror. You know what I mean?
Because her character already has an aversion to men, so it was like definitely related to that.
And she was hobbled. Not that, but it's like she had...
Well, yeah.
Like, yeah.
Her leg was broken. Mobility issues. Yeah.
Yeah, like a bunch of stuff was going on with her. And there's like also sorry, last thing about this scene, though, like that weird movie that keeps playing in the background.
Oh, right.
There's with a movie that too. Lady. There's like a naked woman and she's eating an apple.
Yeah. And the video game time. Is the video game is apples.
The video game's apples, yeah. And then there's this lady, and it keeps coming up. Like, anytime they turn on the TV, because also the room they're in is really important. That room that she's getting raped in is, like, where her uncle keeps a lot of, like, his tapes and a lot of, like it's like the library, like the office, basically.
And this is right, I mean, I think, do we already kind of know it was, like, a weird sex club before this, or is it kind of during and after this
I think it kind of... It hints at it early on, but mm-hmm. this is where I think this you is the catalyst. Tapes. Yeah. So it's when Frank Stallone shows up. He's the police dude. I don't know what his official police role is, detective or whatever. But he's an arrogant prick, and he kind of shows up, and he's definitely a victim blamer.
Oh, yeah. The whole time they're all like, this bitch is crazy, and she definitely didn't get raped.
Yeah. Like, well, yeah, that's the thing is, like, this is where it becomes. Like, her history of mental illness starts to come up, and they're like, the cops are definitely kind of buying into this whole idea of like, oh, this broad is crazy. Maybe we shouldn't even trust her word. But at this point, we're also informed that Carol will at some point be in, visited by Lieutenant Sharp. Lieutenant Sharp's going to follow up with her after this crime is happened.
Yeah, about the lake death, right?
Yeah. No, just about her incident. Yeah.
And this
incident.
Is another thing I remembered about, like, the victim blaming and the, like, attitude of the cop towards her. Is he said, the rape crisis, women will help you, or so, like, in this very kind of dismissive, condescending, like, oh yeah, these broads that take care of the other broads that, like, showed somebody their boobs out a window.
No,
and
but
then,
also, I might be wrong, but Sharp's there because of the internal investigation that's also happening within the police office, too.
Because
of the death. Because the death is, like, of that man is really emphasized in the movie. It's like, that was a problem, and it, like, caused a problem, and that's also why the cops are being so fucking mean to her, is because they think, like, she caused unnecessary problems for them.
So it's that same, that theme of, yeah, like, police corruption and, you know, whatever, Thin Blue. They're all, like, having each other's back, and he's pissed about having it. Yeah. No, that's true.
And now this cop's coming to fucking stop by and check on her, though.
Lieutenant Sharp.
And so, you know, she's shattered, obviously, after this event. And then when Lieutenant Sharp shows up... I like the way the film does this because it's, you know, the dude shows up and she's like, are you Lieutenant Sharp? And he's kind of like, yes. The movie's kind of written and shot in a way that it kind of telegraphs the fact that maybe this guy that just showed up isn't Lieutenant Sharp.
I think
she might say
you're Lieutenant Sharp, aren't you, or something. Yeah. And then he's like,
yes.
Sure, I am.
Do you think I'm Lieutenant? No, he's literally like, he talks in like riddles for the first meeting.
And it's Peter Coyote.
And he's Peter Coyote.
And he's really kind of hot. Not even going to lie.
Hey.
He's doing his big one in this movie.
Wait till we have him with like a really hot broad, and then Cody just gets to do this to us. Jason Lee is a pretty hot broad.
She is.
I thought she was. Well, I mean, we can get into this into the analysis, but you know, I thought her acting was really interesting in this movie. It's a little before she sort of develops her like Keanu Reeves, this is who I am kind of persona, which I think, you know, some people critique that, but I kind of like it. Like, I like the, like, you know what you're gonna get when you hire Jennifer Jason Leigh, is like, she's this kind of person.
She
but I think it was kind of
new Twin Peaks, yeah, but
it was before
that,
you know. Yeah. And so she was like, she didn't quite have her persona yet, her star actor persona.
Yeah.
So after Pietro Coyote shows up, Carol's reality really starts to break down. We get to delve into the mysteries of the building a bit. Carol and Lieutenant Sharp start to have kind of an interesting relationship.
Yeah, he starts flirting with her the second mm-hmm. he sees her also.
And that's what I remember saying that and being like, ooh, is this going to be one of those like, oh, the cop comes to help the girl that was raped and then they make sweet love or whatever.
But
right
it
after.
Makes more sense now in retrospect. He honestly had no idea what was going on.
Right. Well, yes, he did.
But
kind of.
But in a different sense. He didn't know exactly like the situation. But he just starts trying to like honestly get some immediately.
For sure. It gets pretty surreal at this point. Some really cool sort of like, is this really happening? Is it not happening? She continues to explore the space. It gets weirder and weirder. She begins to think that maybe somebody is living in the space with her, could be following her around or stalking her throughout the building. Right. The cops don't ever really get any better. One of them might die. We won't tell you which one. I don't want to give away too many things in these recaps. You
actually,
know what I mean?
that's a good I get, question also. Should we like not be trying to spoil the entire film for
I don't want to spoil too many things.
Or should we do like spoil corner where we're like warning, this is where we spoil.
Well, I mean, if there's something we really want to talk about, we could do that. But like, I definitely want to leave some things to the viewers to like find themselves.
But then I want to say a couple things about as you're like the explorer. In the space, there's a lot of like it feel there's like some homage stuff where it feels the music and the sets and the weird kind of stunted talking feels David Lynchy. That there's this hallway that's like straight out of Suspiria.
Oh yeah, it's beautiful
because they're it's mastering gorgeous. The liminal space vibe
exactly
for sure.
No, it's definitely and I don't know if you're going to go into this too much, but there's a lot. She's obviously, as you said, had like some recent mental health issues. So yeah, we get into that typical, is this really happening or is she just crazy? There's some flashback stuff with like her mom.
Yeah, she has some mom issues who is like probably trying to act in her best interest, but also is maybe like a little controlling.
She's got a really great leopard print outfit.
She does have like good hair and she just wants her daughter to stay home.
Yeah.
Really.
But I mean, that's sort of what we get that out of it. So you get into that like, is this a delusion situation or is this happening? Yeah. Is somebody else in the space with her or is she imagining it?
And like, no one believed her too. Like it's definitely like no one thinks she's really telling the truth. At least like anyone that could help her. No one really is like, oh, okay.
Yeah. That is one of the critical pieces of this is that, you know, all of these things, whether they're really happening, which some of them are, and whether they're not happening, she doesn't really have anybody on her side per se. It's kind of a lonely character that kind of wanders through this, and that definitely kind of ramps up where we're going towards the end of this as she starts to unearth some of the unsettling memories of her freaky ass late uncle Fletcher, and she continues to explore the space. It kind of starts to feel like it's even more expansive. She finds more like weird rooms and hallways, which I think is very cool. One of the things about this movie that I really enjoyed was just how intricate the space is, how weird it was.
The rooms were weird. Mm-hmm. There's like one room specifically, and if you see the movie, you'll know like it's a weird room.
I wrote Pee Wee vibes. About-
oh my God. I know what you mean though. I know what you mean.
Yeah.
So this all leads to a pretty unexpected conclusion that you don't really see coming, and I will leave it at that because I don't want to ruin this movie.
But now I will say exact. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah,
yeah. They all die.
We're gonna tell you everything.
So that's that. So that's what the movie's about. What are your gut feelings about this film? What jumped out? Did you like it? Did you not like it? What worked? What didn't work?
Okay. I really liked it. Without giving too much away, like it was just like, I don't know. It had like some really terrible elements. And I think like that's also kind of a problem with horror movies. I love them very deeply, but kind of their only way of emphasizing like a bad character or like also like making something terrible is usually like involving, you know, something at the expense of a woman, like usually her getting
or an animal
raped or like murdered or like an animal. Like I feel like also a lot of movies, people are like, this is the most brutal movie of all time. A lot of those movies are just ones where a woman gets murdered or like literally tortured for an hour and a half.
And that there is a little teeny part that I would also like to trigger warning about torture porn, which is late. It feels that way to me, which is the one thing that I am not a huge fan of. And I mean, I do, it depends to me.
Like, it does.
Obviously, I like Martyrs anyway.
Yeah, it's subjective.
It took me forever
for sure
to watch it. And this has some stuff like that. And I think in the service of a story that is a full enough story that I'm not mad about it, but there is definitely some,
yeah.
I don't like to see people suffer.
Yeah. Well, there's the thing about this movie that makes it like better to me than just a torture porn movie. Like I can't think of one, like maybe like August Underground. That's a great example of a movie I honestly think is bad.
You've seen that?
Yes. I don't want to talk about it fully right now.
I haven't even seen that.
That's my little baby.
But I'm sorry to anyone who likes that. I don't like that movie, not because I don't think it's like great. I guess like I understand why people might like it, but because it is just a movie where people get tortured and there's no plot. And this movie, there's a plot. And I also feel like while it touches on some really hard issues, it doesn't make me like feel terrible at the end. It doesn't make me like actually feel like sad or miserable, which I kind of appreciate. Because while I want to like watch disturbing content, I don't like always want to feel like everything is terrible and everyone who's terrible wins in the end. So it's kind of like it's not like fully great, but it's like less terrible than a lot of things I've seen. And I feel like it handles a lot of issues in a way better way. And I'm kind of impressed for a movie that's also made in like 1989. To be doing that better than like a lot of newer movies.
The woman was a full character, and there is actually whatever I said they called them, like the rape ladies or whatever, the rape whatever the cop dismissively said. There's another female character that is a support person that does come into it.
Yeah,
they passed that test.
Yeah, we didn't even touch on
that. On that. No, or the Bechdel test.
They,
no,
they passed that test.
Well, they're talking about a man that raped her, though. Actually, yeah, I think so. They probably failed. But I think that it handles this stuff, and that's not even just. I thought it was a fun movie, and then it gets a little dark.
It does.
But it, I think it does it pretty deftly, actually.
There's a lot about it I liked. I love the way it looks. I love, like I said, the exploration of the space. So much like Argento stuff. So much just sort of like surreal imagery in some of the weird porn rooms that she's walking through. Some of the sort of psychedelic dream sequences that we don't know if they're happening or not are very cool looking. There's an eyeball that comes through a window at some point. Yeah. One of the questions I wanted to ask everybody, because this really does feel like it kind of maybe veers into a territory of, is this a horror movie or not? Do you guys think this is a horror movie?
Yes. And I actually, like, in my notes wrote a point where I was like, at this point it became a horror movie. So I think it goes all the way to, like, there's a fucking jump scare at a point.
Yeah, the jump scare rules. The gimp scene where you think it might be just, you know, we're introduced to a lot of sort of like mannequins and like still life people throughout the movie. And then there's this sequence where...
Is this a spoiler?
I don't think so. It's an effective scene. I mean, it could be if you're like, yeah.
If you don't want any like content spoiled, but it's not like...
Totally. There's just like a creepy dude sitting on a bed with like full on... bondage mask, and you think maybe it's just one of those dummies, and then it starts to move and like it's a real person. It's very effectively done. It definitely becomes a horror movie, I think, at some point, even though it kind of like toes the line for the bulk of the film.
I don't know. I don't know if I thought it was necessarily a horror movie, but at the same time, I don't think it's like really a thriller either, because there are like some weird kind of like otherworldly elements to it. But like, I don't know, like I wouldn't consider like Seven a horror movie. Do you know what I mean? And yet it has a bunch of like jump scares and horror elements that are pretty nasty.
I have a similar feeling about Seven, and I'm sure I'd get crucified for saying it. And the same with Silence of the Lambs, where I'm like, later in life, I'm like, okay, I guess maybe this is a horror film. But
do people think Seven's a horror movie?
I think there's I think there's a debate on whether it's just like a crime thriller or
a horror. It is a crime thriller. It's a movie about a serial killer. It's which could be a horror film, but it's more so based on like cops and like how they're solving this mystery.
Yeah, it's like a procedural kind of. Yeah.
Which again, that's what's hard is because all of those elements can be in a horror film. You can have a horror film that is about cops solving a mystery, but at the same time I think it is just like a thriller.
It's just how much does it lean into the horror elements and how much does it lean into the procedural?
And how big is the PR campaign? And, and who's the biggest? Yeah, who's has the big like Brad Pitt? No, but like the biggest what's song. The cast? Is that because I think maybe even things were billed as not horror movies because it was supposed to get like a wider
marketing
release.
Is a big deal,
But yeah, I've never thought of Seven as a horror movie.
No,
but I think this is a horror movie.
I would, I guess, like again because also maybe to me like. Horror can be like contemporary. It can also be like from the regular world for sure. But at the same time, I do think like there has to be sort of like an element of a horror movie where something's like not human, something's off in a sense. Where like this movie does like dive into like weird dream theories.
So wait,
and,
do you
like,
think if something's a slasher where the killer is just a human and there's no supernatural element, it's
but
not
a lot of them
movie?
Aren't. Like for example, even like Friday the 13th, that's also got supernatural stuff and
they
elements.
Almost always
in it.
Do, but they don't always. Sometimes it's just like
well, like maybe The Strangers. I don't think The Strangers is a horror film either.
You know.
I think The Strangers is a thriller movie
you
because
don't think
it's
The Strangers is a horror film.
I mean, I
that
guess
is gonna be in a
this
no,
would
we're
be
gonna
a problem.
To, we're
gonna
have
we're
to.
Gonna,
like,
we can't talk about it.
This will have to. Continue
I guess to
into
me,
the next.
It's subjective. It really is because it's about like because I don't think it has. You can be scared by a thriller. Do you know what I mean?
Totally. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean that's a good point. I just kind of wanted to get a gut reaction that we weren't, you know. We weren't reviewing a movie on our first episode of our podcast that really wasn't a horror film.
It is,
I
think.
I think it's a horror
because
film.
It has, again, like weird dream sequences. It has like a lot of like weird imagery. And it also, I think the intention of this film is to scare you. I don't think it's just to tell a story. I think it's also like we want to scare you.
There's a lot of interesting exploration of gender in this film. Mm-hmm. On multiple
I know, I didn't
levels. Want to
leave that on the table. I don't want to like spoil anything.
I don't
want to
leave that either, but yeah. I don't know if we want to get into it too deeply because it is kind of a spoiler. So I think maybe leaving it there, just understanding that it has a pretty, even if it's a little clumsy because of how old it is, it's a pretty daring attempt at kind of tackling gender in an era where this isn't something that was really being talked about.
There's a little bit of, like clunkiness. There might be the way a character is portrayed is like slightly cartoonish in terms of voice. Mm-hmm. It felt weird to watch that handled pretty well for 1988, 1989, when I remember I was in elementary school at that time, and that was certainly not how gender was treated. Yeah. You know, like, I don't know.
It does also talk about mental illness, which I think is like kind of that's like a very hard thing to do. Honestly, I think like a lot of people have gotten it wrong. And like this movie also, I think, does like an okay job because it's not like specifically trying to name like any particular illness or trying to like it doesn't like I don't know. I guess like certain horror movies and certain movies in general, like, will have, like, a specific mental illness that's, like, central to a character and also is, like, I don't know, like, not a superpower, but kind of, like, this weird aspect of it's, like, their full personality or, like, their only arc is, like, they're, like, sick.
It's
they're, like,
too
fucked
on the
up.
Nose and it's, like, what the only way we can think of to make this character three-dimensional is by throwing in, like, this very specific mental illness that we sort of arbitrarily applied to them.
Or, like, the reason they're crazy is like, because they have schizophrenia.
This didn't
like,
really get into that, and it also never really explained why she was hobbling around in a boot the whole
movie.
Well,
okay, so before, I think this is probably, like, we're getting close to the leaving it. It maybe was an exploration of trauma.
Yeah.
Yeah,
no,
for
definitely.
Sure.
And it was a pretty surprisingly complex and well done exploration of trauma. I mean, with Tama.
I agree.
Tama.
Tom and Chameleon.
No, that's true. Without it, it also like definitely like without spoiling too much, like does a better job of depicting like the complex emotions that trauma brings. Like it's not like like the characters don't always do things that like you would understand or like fully like appreciate. But at the same time, like I feel like at the end, I like look back and I'm like, okay, that makes sense to me. That's like maybe more realistic. And like, obviously I don't understand why someone would do that, but I also haven't had that situation happen to me. And I haven't like tried to cover it up in my brain. Do you know what I mean?
Right. And it's not a full hand holding
no
experience, which is what bothers me. It's like, here's some stuff that happened. Here's some ways people are fucked up.
And you can figure it out. Like, yeah.
And so maybe there's a little bit of hand holding towards the end.
Yeah. But well, that's usually what happens in movies is they have to like really quickly be like, in case you forgot. You can't
figure it out. Yeah.
This is what happened, by the way.
Okay.
Okay. So I think this is a pretty good dissection of this. Before we do our final vote, which is what we're going to do in each of these episodes, is we're each going to take a vote on yes or no, is this a hidden gem? I just want to do our quick obscurity rating on this film. So, IMDb votes, 1,800.
Whoa.
Got 2 points there. Got some two of them.
Just say it again so you can cut that part.
1,800 points. It got 2 points there. IMDb critic reviews.
I'm going to do the
14.
Math. Okay.
2 points there. Rotten Tomato critic reviews, 0.
Okay.
Gets a full point there. The availability is kind of interesting because this is available on DVD and there was a Blu-ray release, but it's kind of hard to find. Like, you kind of have to dig for it if you don't have a video store to rent it from. I think it might be even kind of hard to find on like eBay and shit.
Oh. I mean, you emailed it to me. That's how I watch this movie.
I bootleg things and don't tell anybody or I'll slap the shit out of you.
This is the end.
Cut that out. Oh, I forgot. That's why. That's how you got it. My bad. I thought he just owned it.
No. Oh, you did bootleg. But it is available
Stop
to rent.
Saying that.
It's available cut to rent at our out. Local movie store.
Don't let them know.
Nobody bootlegged anything.
we don't do that.
Years ago. Different internet connection.
It's only streaming on two platforms, which are like, it's either like for rent or on like a subscription thing. Here comes our dog. He's over our podcast. So I think that he's telling us that we need to wrap this up. So I think that fits under the kind of limited streaming category, which that's 2 points. So total points out of 10, 7. Pretty high, I think, relative to what it could be. I mean, compared to our examples earlier. So here's what I want to do. We'll each, on the count of three, we'll each put a 1 or a 0 in the air. 1 is, yes, this is a hidden gem. 0, it's not a hidden gem. Okay, is this a hidden gem? 3, 2, 1. I want the record to show that we have 3 votes that this film is a hidden gem.
And
so there we have it. Yep. Our first episode, we have our first hidden gem. We'll put this on a list somewhere. We still don't know what we're doing, but, you know.
We'll figure it out. Don't worry.
We will figure it out.
I have an idea that might go very differently next time.
Alfred's stuck in a plant.
Our dog's stuck in a plant. Thank you for joining us. No one's going to listen to this first episode.
Okay.
Maybe by the 110th episode, you guys will get into it. And you can come back to this one and listen to our obscurity rating and all of our meandering talking about how the show's going to go. With that, I want to say goodbye, good night, good morning. Do you guys have any finishing thoughts?
Good afternoon.
Good day.
Thanks, everyone.
Dirt Dogs on a Gym Hunt.